On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we preview the second half, or we're calling it part two of the 2026 MLB regular season storylines we are looking forward to with the trade deadline approaching, some awards races that have our attention. We also go around the league, talk about a weird trade. Lance McCullers is a Brewer. Chase Burns signs an extension. The A's are a mess, and get off your iPad. Finally, it's Friday, so we give you the good, the bad, the ugly, which features, honestly, mostly bad. But we have a good time with it. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows the second half of the season isn't actually half the season. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And did you know that Luis Arraez is on pace to hit 660? Just double what he's hitting now, right?
Oh, I missed that bit so much. Thank you so much for bringing it back on this this Friday, July 17th, 2026, the beginning of the second
part.
Well, you wouldn't call it the second part. Part two. Part two. Let's just do that. I like that.
Season part two, season. Electric Boogaloo. That is what we are going to preview here on this episode. We'll run through some of the biggest storylines of the second part, or at least what we think they're going to be. Got some trades to chat about, and it's Friday, so we will do the good, the bad, the ugly. But let's begin by looking ahead. That's our opener. What is the future, Jordan, except for anticipated memories, the second half, the second part, the second chunk of the season has arrived. We are going to pick through it and think about what we think is going to be important.
Yeah, and some of these, I think it's important to begin when we think about the post All-Star break experience. I think about it, I know we're making this even more complicated, in three chunks, the part two in three chunks, right? I guess four chunks, but let's keep the focus on the regular season, right? We know the postseason is its own thing. There is, okay, oh my God, the trade deadline is coming up. Then there's the like easing into like the quote unquote dog days, I feel like is really once you get past the deadline, it's August, you don't feel like you're quite at the level of frenetic postseason push. You kind of ease into that. And then it's the stretch run. It's September. It's the actual push for postseason position. So let's begin. We'll go roughly chronologically, right? The things that we are thinking about soonest, and begin with a player that we have not seen in quite some time, and that is Aaron Judge. We remarked on several occasions throughout the All-Star week that, hey, Aaron Judge isn't here. Also, Shohei Ohtani isn't here, but Shohei Ohtani was still hitting home runs last weekend, whereas Aaron Judge here was really, yeah.
Everyone here is shorter on average than I'm used to. Mm-hmm. At the All-Star game, true. I used to look up to these men. Now I look right at them.
Well, Jacob Mizorowski is still kind of like, whoa, guy's pretty tall. James Wood is like, whoa, hey, that guy's pretty tall.
Can't really look up to Jacob Mizorowski, though, because he's a child. Aaron Judge, not at the All-Star game, not on the field for the Yankees since May 31st. He has a rib boo-boo. The specifics of that rib boo-boo are important because how boo-boo-y they are now will dictate when he gets back. The Yankees general manager, Brian Cashman, before the All-Star break said that the team was going to do imaging during the All-Star break and that that imaging would paint a better picture of Judge's timeline. We've yet to get that information. After the show, I'm going to get in my car, drive up to New York, and walk into Cashman's office and say, give me the truth, Brian. I think this conversation is, here's why it's interesting, right? Judge has to be back before October. If he's not back by October, Yankees don't have a chance, right? If he comes back in time to be kind of built up for the playoffs, it doesn't really fundamentally change the way that I think about this team compared to where they were on opening day. Consider, or, you know, if Fried and Rodon and Stanton, who knows, but if all these pieces are back healthy, the Yankees right now are operating below their maximum capacity, well below it. And so it's difficult to evaluate the team they are now for compared to the team that they could be when the postseason begins. So in my mind, it's like, when are they full strength? If they get back to full strength, Judge in tow by September 1st, and they're only like three or four games back of the Rays in the division, then you're like, okay, they could chase him down. If they don't, then you're starting to worry a little bit. Right now, the Rays have a three-game lead. If Judge is back August 10th and not September 10th, that fundamentally changes the way that that race goes.
Yeah, and that's just when we're talking about the Yankees' chances, we know that last year they survived the wild card round without having won the division, but I still think that that is going to be an important part of what they're going for in the second half with or without Judge after what they dealt with last year. And it's been interesting because, you know, he hasn't played since May 31st. For a few weeks, they were doing just fine. That June swoon was no swoon at all for the first few weeks of June. And then it obviously went south and continued into July. They finished the first half on a strong note, sweeping the Washington Nationals. But they still have that gap behind the Rays. And yeah, they just this offense, especially with Ben Rice not performing at the level he was for the first few months, this lineup just does not seem as threatening. They do still have some other good players. By the way, let's just lump in these other guys because I at least mentioned them in my power rankings. Giancarlo Stanton, we seeing him anytime soon. Max Fried, Carlos Rodon, both those guys also on the injured list. So these are some pretty big pieces. I know you've made the point about Fried being out also being pretty significant for the Yankees. But those are also going to – their return timeline is also absolutely going to impact their chances of chasing down Tampa Bay. But overall, I agree with you. If all or most of those guys are healthy and ready to go in October, this team has the highest ceiling in this league. And it's honestly not even close at this stage. That doesn't mean that it guarantees them getting out of the wild card round if they are unable to win this division.
Let's move to the biggest question of the deadline. Does Tarek Skubal get dealt? I would have said a month ago that the answer was a pretty emphatic yes. If we rewind all the way back to June 1st, the Detroit Tigers, who still to this point employ Tarek Skubal, had the single worst record in the American League. Yes, they woke up on June 1st, worst record in the American League. Skubal had yet to return from that nano needle elbow procedure. And it was like, well, if he does come back, the Tigers are so out of it, you got to think he gets traded. Since then, the Tigers have had the single best record in the American League to claw their way back up the standings. Right now, I believe they are 3.5 back of a wild card spot. Their schedule before the deadline is relatively favorable at Angels, at Cubs, home against the Royals and Orioles. Then they go to play the A's. I would say as of right now, no. I don't think Tarek Skubal is going to get traded. The Tigers are too close for discomfort.
I agree. I think that work doesn't mean we're going to stop talking about it. And doesn't mean that we're going to change our mind three more times over the next few weeks. Because when your record is still this bad as the American League is, it just takes another two or three game losing streak to be like, oh, yeah, they're trading him. So they have certainly made up a lot of ground because of how bad it was 6 weeks ago. But this is still a bad record, and until they're really sniffing 500, there's still a lot of teams they need to leap, and that 3.5 back is still a little bit misleading, especially compared to a team like Boston, who's, you know, really right there, half game back, only two games under 500. Tigers still have a lot of work to do. So while I do agree with you that I lean no at this point, I don't think that this story is over. I think you look at their playoff odds. Fangraphs says 14%. Baseball Prospectus says 24%. It's probably right around there. But that also is a number that could just go down very quickly if some of these other teams around them go up and they, you know, fall in hard times again. That said, as we mentioned, the schedule opportunity is there for them to stay in the mix and at least give Skubal and this team one more chance to go for a postseason push with him atop the rotation.
The thing that is also worth mentioning, Skubal has been very good, but not full blast since he got back. Yes. He has made six starts. Over those six starts, he has a 3.62 ERA. His peripherals actually are a little bit worse than that. He has struck out a lot of dudes, but has allowed more hard contact than you would usually expect. He has not thrown 100 pitches. He is not at full strength. And I'm curious if that changes the way that the Tigers and other teams value him in trade conversations. The Tigers aren't budging. Like in their minds, he's Tarek Skubal, two-time Cy Young King. For these other teams, I would imagine when they pick up the phone and call President of Baseball Operations Scott Harris, they're going to say, hey, you got damaged goods, Scott. Please trade him to us for cents on the dollar. And I don't think that the Tigers are going to move that way.
I think that's exactly right. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's why every outing now is also important just in that regard, because he has yet to go past six innings. Yes, he still looks like one of the best pitchers in baseball, but the conversations we were talking about before he got injured about what kind of haul he could bring in, even as a rental, when you factor in the injury, I mean, I think you have to factor in the injury regardless. You know, I think that is still has to be something that teams are going to be weighing either way. But I do think that every time he doesn't go out there and throw seven scoreless, it's just a little bit less likely that someone's like, here are three top 100 prospects, or even two top 100 prospects, right? And so, but I'm so glad you said it, because the Tigers, they're like, no, like, he's Tarek Skubal. He's pitching. He's healthy now.
You see this guy? His name's Tarek Skubal. You're going to pay for that.
So I think that because of that, that lessens the likelihood that they find a match, right? There's also a scenario where we end up kind of stuck in the middle, where the Tigers are still around 10 to 15% playoff odds and they're holding the line. They're not like, they're like, okay, we still need to be blown away here. We're willing to do it, but we're not like we have to do it. And then they just hold on and try to go for it. Now that's kind of, we'll see how we feel about that, if that's how we end up doing this. But I think that's also in play.
It's also worth saying that any reports you see between now and deadline day about the Tigers are not trading him or the Tigers are trading him for sure, it's not that you shouldn't believe those. It's that this is not set in stone. This is a moving target. And I would say right now, the Tigers don't know if they're going to trade Tarek Skubal. They're looking at a lot of the same things we are in terms of where they're at in the standings, their playoff odds, and how Skubal is pitching. If Skubal goes out and is dominant and the Tigers lose 10 in a row, like, he's going to get traded, right? If he goes out there and is ass and the Tigers win a bunch of games, they're probably not going to trade it. Like, we don't know. So we're sitting and we're waiting, and we will talk about this in a couple of weeks. The one thing I do feel decent about, though, is that this trade deadline might be a bit of a snoozer. There are only 8 teams right now with single-digit playoff odds. That is Nats, A's, Royals, Angels, Giants, Mets, Rockies, and Reds. The way to really compare it is like teams with playoff odds like 15 or lower. If you compare that to previous seasons, like, that's where the big drop-off is. There's a lot of teams this year that are like 20 and above, just because of how smushed everything is in the wild card race. That means we aren't going to have as many traditional sellers, and the traditional sellers we do have don't really have a lot of obvious big name pieces to trade, pieces that are going to hit free agency this winter. That means two things. Either I think we could see some teams that are closer to the playoffs act as sellers, and I would honestly say the Nats fit that bill as well. Yep. Or we're going to see teams that are big sellers trading away players that have multiple years of control. And that could be a Joe Adell from the Angels, right? That could be a big contract like Willy Adames, Matt Chapman from the Giants. That could be Jake McCarthy from the Rockies. There are a lot of different guys, Mickey Moniak, with multiple years of control that we could see dealt. You have on our dock the Arise line. Please explain the Arise line. Is that hitting 330?
No, but it is relevant to the conversation, as Luis Arise has, of course, he's an all-star. He's been playing. It's looking like the best version of Luis Arise, or at least close to it, when you add in the fact that he's been playing some damn good second base defense. He has been a very good player. And I mentioned the Arise line because he is one player, because of the state of the Giants and because he's on a one-year contract, that is a player I am 95% certain is going to be traded. And he's really good. Will a player better than Luis Arraez be traded at this deadline? We just had the Scooble conversation. We can move that to the side. There are other names that have been thrown out that are certainly better than Luis Arraez in conversations, but their likelihood of getting moved is much lower, whether that's the C.J. Abrams. I think the Minnesota Twins are an interesting conversation here. I'll spare Byron Buxton the rumors because he's been very consistent saying, I'm not going anywhere. Like, I have a no-trade clause. Leave me alone.
Pause here.
Sure.
Byron Buxton, I want to give him so much credit because what will often happen with guys with the no-trade clause, and they get asked about it, they are very political. You're like, well, you know, the future is malleable and we're all going to die one day. And I like where I'm at. I'm where my feet are, blah. Byron Buxton is like, shut up. I'm not leaving. Do not trade me. I like it here. Thank you. I don't know how many times this man has to keep saying this for us to believe him. Like, Byron Buxton is going to nix, and maybe he's doing this for leverage, but he feels like he's just going to nix any deal that comes his way.
And listen, I still don't totally understand how they're doing it, but the Twins just straight up aren't that bad right now. It'd be one thing if they were in last place by a lot and it would at least Byron Buxton, you could at least theorize that he wasn't having a good time coming to work every day. But right now he's like, whatever. I love Minnesota. We're fine. We're a totally decent team. Like, now that said, moving Buxton to the side, I still do wonder if they are a team, if they do have a bad next couple of weeks, if they start entertaining Joe Ryan as a possibility, especially because that could bring in a serious haul if Tarek Skubal is not available. I mentioned Luis Arraez. The other name you threw out at me before I you know, introduced the Arraez line is Freddy Peralta. Now, who's been better this season, Luis Arraez or Freddy Peralta? Clearly Luis Arraez. However, Freddy Peralta is another player who has a very strong track record, who we feel very strongly is going to get traded. Is there a pitcher better than Freddy Peralta that is going to get traded? Is there, I mean, it's not that hard to believe that a pitcher that's having a better season than Freddy Peralta could get traded, but there still could be some teams, and particularly the Mets could value Freddy Peralta at a level where they're going to want to maybe, well, I still don't think there's any reason they're going to want to keep him because I've made this point before, because they're spending so much money, the comp pick that they would get for giving Freddy Peralta QO would be like after the fourth round, which I have to imagine they think they could get a better return on that in a trade, even if it's at the deadline here. So that's what I'm thinking about. Arraez, maybe you could throw Taylor Ward in there, depending on what you think about the Orioles. Another player who I think would be very likely to be moved if the Orioles stay in just in the messy,
National League All-Star Foster Griffin for the Washington Nationals.
Yep, sure. Certainly having a better season than Freddy Peralta.
So the thing that I always look at the deadline, and then we'll finish the deadline conversation. How many pitchers get traded that start postseason games? It's usually three or four, which feels lower than what your brain's telling you. But on average, three or four guys get dealt that end up starting postseason games. Right now, I think the two locks are Griffin and Freddy Peralta. Is there anyone else that you could see getting dealt that gets a start in October?
I would throw out Robbie Ray as someone who, depending on the team situation, could plausibly get a start. I think he's going to get traded, so I don't know how you value Robbie Ray, but he's in there. I think Clay Holmes is an interesting name, to be honest.
Yep.
Once he maybe gets healthy, I know he's obviously still coming back from injury. That would be a name to watch. And then
the
I do
Royals
think
guys,
that
this is Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha, worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, Lugo's been really bad, but Wacha for sure. I mean, that's a guy, an all-star, and he's certainly been munching innings as well as anybody. And I think that would be the last thing I want to mention about the deadline is I am really focused on the Angels and the Rockies, but more so the Angels because they have starting pitchers like Detmers and Soriano to move. Will these new front offices be willing to act differently than the past and recognize, like, yes, let's participate in this trade market. Let's take advantage of the fact that we are an obvious seller and we have stuff that people want. And the Angels, like, does John Mozeliak say, like, yeah, duh, we should trade Reed Detmers. Duh, we should trade Jose Soriano. We're nowhere close to winning. Or does he look at it and say, like, hey, if we can get enough of these other things fixed, we actually could be a competent team next year. That's why with those front offices, I'm really, really, really curious if they're willing to make things spicy, because Detmers would certainly qualify. Soriano, I know he's been a lot more inconsistent lately, but that is also those teams I'm really watching closely, the Angels and the Rockies. All right, let's move away from the deadline. And where would you want to go, towards awards, or do you want to just look at the standings, which are really something right now?
What Cinderellas make the playoffs? I don't want to get too semantic-y about what makes a Cinderella, but in my mind, these are the teams where if they made the playoffs, I think the opening day version of us would be pretty shocked.
Yes.
That is the Marlins, Cardinals, Nationals, White Sox, and Twins. That's how I'm thinking about it. I'm not really thinking about it from preseason, you know, Fangraphs post, like odds. It's like Jake Mintz on March 25th, would his jaw have dropped if future Jordan said Marlins, Cardinals, Nationals, White Sox, Twins make the playoffs? The Marlins are the only one in the NL that is currently in a playoff spot. They're 52-45. That's 7 games above 500. They're holding that third wildcard spot, 1 game over the Cardinals. Their playoff odds are 34.6. They've been the best team in baseball for what, like a month and a half now. Can they survive in a post AI iPad in the dugout world? We'll talk about that in a little bit. They feel like a team that was definitely up to some stuff. Cardinals, 1 game back, 31% playoff odds. Nationals, 4 games back, 3.8% playoff odds. Jordan, Marlins, Cards, Nats, do any of these teams make the playoffs?
Oh, so we're just sticking with the NL teams first.
Starting the NL.
So Nats, I think, like, no chance. And that's what the odds would tell you. And I just think based on the pitching, based on the fact that they're more likely to subtract, I'm moving them to the side. Sorry to my brother and producer Colin Brennan, the Nats fans who are live tweeting or live texting every single thing that happens in every Nats game in my group chat with them. As for the Marlins and Cardinals, the prides of Jupiter spring training,
honestly, don't answer the question. The sounds that you're making, the effects that are emanating from your mouth are telling the story that you are wavering, that you are unsure. Of these teams, I would probably say no. If I had to pick one more team to get that last wild card spot, I'm going to go with the Pirates. They have the best run differential. Their offense has been cooking. I feel better about their pitching pumping up. They're going to definitely add pieces at the deadline. They're going to be the most aggressive team of these three. So do the Marlins, Cardinals make the playoffs? I'm going to end up saying no. In the American League, let's talk about the White Sox and the Twins. The White Sox right now are effectively tied atop the division. They have one fewer win and one fewer loss than the Cleveland Guardians. The Twins are 3 games back of those two, which is just outrageous to say out loud. And the Twins are tied for the last wild card spot in the American League. Jordan, what do we do with these two teams?
So I know we just sort of mentioned them a little bit in the context of Buxton. I want to move the Twins to the side. Even coming into the season, the vibes because of what happened at the end of last season and then, oh, we thought they're selling the team and then they're not, were as low as almost any team in the league. But the roster just wasn't that bad. I mean, you looked at the division and you looked at the playoff odds. They were at 20, 25, 30% coming into the season. And it's not like they've subtracted during the year. So I'm not shocked that they're here. Does that mean I'm picking them to then make the postseason? No. I think I still would take the White Sox over them. I think they're more likely to add. I think the White Sox are just the same point that you made about the Pirates. I think that's a front office that's way more likely to say, like, screw it. Let's go for this thing. We're in this. Why not? We do have some pieces to move. Funny enough, those teams already made it that weird, you know, draft night trade where they ship Jacob Gonzalez to get some more draft capital. Jacob Gonzalez is going to now fill in the infield for the Pirates. But I do think that the White Sox, I still think, are going to be more aggressive. And frankly, I've been just as impressed with them as a team. I guess they don't have the high-end pitching that Minnesota does in the form of Joe Ryan, but Davis Martin's pretty good, and both teams' bullpens are not particularly awesome, although the White Sox is merely like not good, and the Twins is like actively pretty awful. So with
you look
that
at the Twins' bullpen, and you're like, yeah. Wow, this bullpen looks like a bullpen that traded everybody away. Oh, wait, that's exactly what happened last trade deadline. I think that the Guardians end up winning that division. I just, mm-hmm. the experience and the starting pitching, mm-hmm. once Jose Ramirez gets back, I think that they will finish ahead of the White Sox. The White Sox have a much better shot at the wild card than the Twins do. Do both of them make it? In the world for both of them to miss it, by the way, then we're talking about the Red Sox, Astros, Orioles, Blue Jays, and Tigers, teams that I just can't imagine being in the playoffs right now.
But hold on. I hear what you're saying, but think about how we started this conversation. Think about March. I was the idiot saying we were going to get four AL East teams in the postseason. And now you're being like, well, clearly one of these AL Central teams has to get in addition to the Guardians, as opposed to these jokes of a franchise in the reigning AL champions, the Boston Red Sox, the Houston Astros, who've been in the postseason every single season except until last year, the Tigers, who, of course, had high hopes. So it's just a very funny dynamic that you're basically saying you do believe that maybe one of these AL Central teams the way I see it is, either the White Sox are going to win the division, and oh man, I don't know. I think I agree with you that the Guardians.
Here's where I'm at.
I do agree with the Guardians.
Either the White Sox win the division, or I'm going to say they don't make the playoffs. I'm going to be kind of a bummer here.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So one of these other teams that we've been talking about how embarrassing
they
are all season.
Contract
is,
the AL.
Find their way in.
Just have the Rays and the Yankees play like a 15-game set. Winner goes to the World Series. I'm sure everyone would be happy with that.
Yeah. No, I'm sure Mariners fans would love it. All right. Let's go to Rangers.
Better.
No, it's true. That's exactly correct. Let's stay in the AL, and then we'll finish on Ohtani. AL MVP. As we just mentioned, you, Jake, unimpressed by the American League. Someone's going to have to win this award, though. And I do think that Yordan Alvarez and Junior Caminero have certainly made their statements. Junior Caminero having the advantage of being on the American League team with the best record and clearly their best overall player. Bobby Witt Jr. continues to accumulate WAR for a catastrophic Royals team. So he's just, you know, there's precedent for this. As we've mentioned, we keep calling him Gen Z Trout. He could still win an MVP on a very bad team. That is very possible. However, who else is in the mix here? I think that Yordan, this feels like Yordan's time. As long as the Astros don't completely fall out of it, even if they miss the playoffs again, I think if they're around 500 and he's clearly the best hitter in baseball, I like his chances. He also has to stay healthy, which he has so far, but it's been a challenge for him in the past. But who? Any other names that need to be mentioned?
Cam Schlittler's name should at the very least be brought up. Talking about a pitcher winning Cy Young is odd. No one knows what the threshold is for that. It's funny that they're eligible.
MVP.
It's confusing.
MVP. Pitcher winning MVP.
For MVP.
Yes.
There, pitchers win Cy Young like all the time. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, happens frequently. Yeah.
It happens every year. Twice a year, actually. What does a pitcher need to do to win MVP? I have no idea. But where Cam Schlittler's at right now, 20 starts, 2.05 ERA, 4.1 BWAR, 137 strikeouts. He has been, by a country mile, the best pitcher in the American League. Would you agree?
I mean, Fangraph's WAR would tell you that Dylan Cease has been better, but I understand the point that you're making and don't totally disagree.
If you had an AL Cy Young vote right now, who would you give it to?
I would give it to Cam Schlittler, yes.
Okay. Cam Schlittler... I understand. So part of the reason, Tarek Skubal's last two seasons when he wins the Cy Young, finishes seventh and fifth in MVP. I think those seasons could easily win an MVP against this field. Not maybe easily, but would certainly be like in the mix. And I think what Schlittler has done with a whip under one and 10.3 strikeouts per nine, like I think he absolutely deserves to be in that conversation with... and I'm going to, you know, besmirch two of the best players in the league here, a designated hitter that doesn't run the bases and a slugger that is bad on defense. Like, if Bobby Witt Jr. catches fire, he's the only one where I'm like, that's unimpeachable. No argument. It's got to be him. He finishes a year with like 9 wins and his WRC plus is like 145 or whatever. Then it's like, sorry, Cam Schlettler, you're a pitcher. Besides that, like, I can see him finishing in the top 3.
Yeah, I think that's a little aggressive. I think you make some good points. I think I'm just going to circle it back to Yordan and say that Yordan is having, I mean, he's at a 186 WRC plus. Like, we're talking about one of the better offensive seasons we've seen in quite some time. And I think that he's someone that this feels like his, it feels like, the, you know, it's cleared out for him to win. And because Schlittler, in as it stands now, is in great position to just win the Cy Young Award, I have to imagine that that is going to feel like enough praise and recognition for him. Whereas Yordan, it's like, yeah, no, that's come on. He's so much better at hitting than everybody else. So that's won MVPs before, and I would not be surprised. And I would certainly vote for Yordan if I had a vote right now. And maybe I will have a vote. Who knows? We'll see. Stay tuned to see what award I get. I get the privilege of voting for this year in the American League.
As someone who lives in DC, Baltimore chapter area, I could vote for either league, and that's how we'll finish. Ooh. Shohei Ohtani, or as Mike Tyson called him, Shohei Ohtani.
Ohtani.
Making a Cy Young push. That's the story of this man's season. He doesn't even care about hitting. He's just out there going through the motions at the plate and putting up an OPS that starts with a 9. All Ohtani wants to do is throw the baseball. Can he win a Cy Young? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say probably not. Now, to be fair, he's kind of done it. Like, it's a 1.79 ERA, 14 starts, 85 and two-thirds, striking out almost 10 per 9. He's been very good. Jacob Mizorowski, in 30 more innings, 25 more innings, has been better.
Yeah.
So,
and
there you go.
Listen, Mizorowski, you know, he had a start skipped. Ohtani also, last we heard from him, had a start skipped. He's not scheduled to start this weekend. We've said all season he was already going to be up against it in terms of the workload deficit he was going to have because he's only starting once a week. And now he's had a couple outings that he's missed because he's been trying to be cautious or dealing with knee issues. And so whether it's Mizorowski, who now I also wonder where his workload is going to end up at, because Ohtani might just fall out of this conversation and we're just talking about Christopher Sanchez and Jacob Mizorowski, because it might end up just being more of that conversation where Sanchez is 50 innings ahead of Mizorowski, and how do voters evaluate that? So I think on an inning-to-inning basis, it's hard to be disappointed with what Ohtani has done, and I do still expect him to be one of the best pitchers in the league the rest of the season. But as far as winning this award, I don't think it's relevant anymore. It's disappointing. I'm sure it's disappointing for him, but
The last name to bring up is Zach Wheeler, who has the narrative heft behind him. He has made one more start than Ohtani, despite missing most of April. He has thrown more innings. His ERA is a little higher at 2.13, but that's still pretty low. He is 10-1. Which I do think is relevant because of how he fits into the Phillies season. His return coincides with them getting back into things. He is striking out more batters than Ohtani. He is walking fewer batters than Ohtani. And I think that Ohtani's biggest competition could be Zach Wheeler, because it might end up being impossible to make the Ohtani over Wheeler argument among guys with like lower innings totals. Obviously, the hilarity of Zach Wheeler having a low innings total argument when he didn't win the Cy Young in 2021 against Corbin Burns, who didn't have that many innings, and Zach Wheeler had all the innings and has always had all the innings. But that's going to be the Christopher Sanchez argument this year, where Sanchez right now is at 127 innings, which I think is second in all of baseball behind only Sandy Alcantara. He's going to finish over 200 easily. And I'm fascinated to see where Miz ends up, because now I think this conversation about NL Cy Young, and by the way, this is as stacked of an awards field as I can remember for like any award. I mean, you go down this list and there are guys further down where it's like, oh, in a normal season, like Yamamoto would be right there. Skeens, the peripherals are still like right there. Chris Sale, Chase Burns, Max Meyer, Eduardo Rodriguez has been incredible. Justin Wroblewski, by the way. And yet, I think right now, if I had to handicap it, it's Miz, it's Wheeler, it's Sanchez, and it's Ohtani if he keeps pitching. Any final thoughts, Jordan, before we take a break?
Will anybody else get fired? History tells us yes, but we can have that conversation another day because it's always kind of a bummer of a conversation. So we'll save it. If that happened, we kind of got some of the firings out of the way early this year, right? We got Perry's out. We got managers getting out of there early April. We were firing managers. So will we have more? That's always a question as the season winds down. But we will leave that for now. We're going to take a break. When we return, some more news and notes before we give you the good, the bad, the ugly. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbecue.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's go around the league. Is this the weirdest trade in recent memory? Lance McCullers Jr. Remember him? He's going to the Brewers alongside a pitcher by the name of Colton Gordon in exchange for Prince Fielder's kid, Jaden Fielder. Huh?
This is a weird one. I feel like we do always get a trade like the day after the All-Star game. That does feel like something that has happened during the All-Star break. This is a weird one, folks. I encourage anyone with an Athletic subscription to go read what Chandler Rome wrote. He's already talked to Lance about this. I sat down with Lance earlier this season when the Astros were in town to just kind of reflect on his very strange journey, certainly with a lot of injuries, but then coming back and being a very bad pitcher by all accounts. This season, it felt like he was starting to find some ways to remain effective, got injured again. He is still injured right now. And the Brewers, with Kyle Harrison getting hurt and Miz, who knows what's going on and how much they're going to, you know, manage his workload, they're looking for arms right now. And I don't know how much Lance McCullers can give them, but it does sound like that this was a unique situation where Lance McCullers, who I believe had a no trade clause and basically planned on finishing his career with Houston almost no matter what, was like, all right, there's very few places that I'm going to get up and go pitch for, but this is a spot that both everybody tells me, yes, this is a place, a team you want to, a team organization you will like, and also clearly an organization that is in position to win. And if he thinks that he can give them literally anything, even if it's just in the regular season, and a team that probably knows, hey, here's what we could maybe do to help Lance McCullers get outs with all of his pitches, none of which are performing very well right now. If he can get healthy, I think this is actually kind of a good landing spot for him.
Very interesting in terms of the amount of money he's owed and what that means for a team like the Brewers. There's definitely money coming their way. Speaking of money, the Cincinnati Reds are spending some of it. 7-year, $105 million extension for All-Star Chase Burns, another player from the loaded 2024 draft, gets paid.
Yeah, and we just sort of mentioned him in passing in the NL Cy Young race, but he's right there. I mean, I wouldn't rule him out if he just goes on a heater over the next couple months. I think what's so impressive about Chase Burns is that, and we've mentioned, it's quite similar to Hunter Green when he came up, where it's like, he can't just do this with two pitches for so. No, he can. If your two pitches are that good and you have managed to dial in the command just enough, he has some of the best stuff in the league. And even though he's barely throwing a third pitch ever, he's throwing hard enough to be really, really, really good. And I think what you're seeing in this investment is, yeah, eventually he'll come around and he'll get that third pitch or maybe a fourth pitch and the command will get better. And he already is one of the best pitchers in the National League. So just think about how much better he could get. And it's always hard, like, how much do you commit to young pitchers, the risk involved? How much do pitchers want to sign away their potential future earnings? This feels like a good meet in the middle of someone who hasn't actually accomplished that much, but has still shown enough to think like, yes, this is someone we want around for the long term.
And talking about it within the context of that draft class, we are 2 years out from draft day and three players have already signed lengthy extensions. Connor Griffin, J.J. Weatherholt, and now Chase Burns. You could envision something similar happening to a Travis Bazana or a Nick Kurtz or even a Carson Benj or a Treyus Savage. This really is shaping up to be an all-time historic draft class. We've talked about it a lot. We'll talk about it again. It is very, very special. Nick Kurtz, could he sign an extension with the A's? Well, any good news right now would be welcome for this franchise. That sneaky lost 9 consecutive games going into the break. The A's are now 14 games under 500, which hilariously means they're only 6.5 back in the AL wildcard. They fired their pitching coach, Scott Emerson, over the break. Their bullpen coach, Dan Hubbs, will be the interim for the rest of the season. Emerson had been on staff since 2015. That is a long, long time. I would say he was more of an old school cat. The A's were more of a traditional organization in terms of pitching stuff. That is not the only reason their pitching has not been good. This team has not really spent money to acquire pitchers. They also play in a Little League park in Sacramento. That being said, the results were simply not good enough, and they make a move to the A's.
Yeah, and I mean, everything has gone wrong for this team at this point. Yes, the pitching has been very bad. The defense has also been very bad. But the offense, which a lot of us were like, this team is going to absolutely bang, has not actually been that good. It's been above average. Kurtz has been amazing. Langeliers have been amazing. Brent Rooker, I don't even think we talked about, out for the year with season-ending surgery. He wasn't hitting very much beforehand. Now Kurtz is also on the IL. So they got a lot to figure out, and this is... I will say there is one bit of good news that they're calling up Tommy White, which is very fun, and we won't spend time on him now. I'm excited to watch him debut this weekend, and maybe he'll give us something to talk about next week. So excited to see Tommy Tanks in the big leagues. But yeah, I mean, they just have so much to fix on the mound, and I don't know how that's going to happen really anytime soon, but I guess firing the pitching coach is a start. So yeah, pretty bleak.
Let's talk about one more thing before we take a break. Put down your iPad, Jordan. Can't use it. At least you can't use AI on it. A story yesterday at The Athletic from Eno Saris reported that MLB is cracking down on the type of technology that can be used in dugouts. The league has allowed iPads to be deployed in general, I believe, for like 10 years now. That is not changing. What is changing is that there is like a custom tab on these iPads that the league provides, where teams can effectively use all of their own proprietary information. And clubs apparently had been using that tab to use like generative AI to help inform in-game decisions, whether that's positioning or pitch calling or reliever usage, et cetera, et cetera. And the league has cracked down on that in order to prevent that type of usage.
I have never been a huge fan of the amount of whether it's the positional cards. And I know that there's big league coaches that listen to this pod where that's like their whole job. And I know that the advance, and it's really impressive. I mean, this is a big part of the conversation of why offense has gone down, is how ridiculously good positioning is. I've had conversations with front office people over the last couple of years where like, it is so hard to get a hit. And it is not just because the pitching is amazing. It is because everyone is standing for 90% of the league. Everyone is standing in the exact right spot. And that is a lot of that is pregame prep that doesn't necessarily have to do with this topic, which is real in-game strategy, but it is related. And there is part of me that just wishes that these incredible athletes could go out and play baseball. Maybe that's a super boomer take, and that's fine with me. I like to think that we're pretty progressive in a lot of other respects and embrace the technology and the research and development and all the innovation. Like, there's room for that, but I do not mind trying to remove some information from the game. I really don't. I think that that's not a bad thing.
It's not about even removing the information. It's about litigating where that information can actually be deployed. Sure. For me, this should not be an open book test, right?
Right.
Do all the studying you want before first pitch. I think that there is something to be said for remembering that information. The players, I mean. hey, if I need to be five steps to my left for this hitter, like, I got to remember that. If this pitcher uses these types of pitches, I got to remember that. Now, yes, are pitchers dealing with more, or players dealing with more data than ever before? Can that be overwhelming? Yeah. But I do think that there really is a conversation about kind of ensuring that the humanity of it remains in the game. And I do think that drawing the line at AI calling pitches or helping to call pitches is totally legitimate, right? Yeah. I'm sure the teams have been doing this, especially with teams calling pitches from the dugout now.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that makes it a little bit easier to hit, I'm in favor of this. I think that this is within that conversation. Players and coaches are going to be like, this is not fair. They're restricting us. They're limiting us. It's like, okay, yeah, but whatever. Like, I don't. Sorry. Sorry about it. Study harder.
Yeah, and I think the league is probably just getting back to wanting, if we are going to give them iPads, we want everyone to have the same information and access to the same information. And it seems like we've slowly pushed the boundaries to where some teams were finding ways to have more information than other teams, which I understand.
It's not even the information, though. It's not even the information. You're like, I used to do this thing in high school, middle school, whatever. And this is, I'm outing myself here. I would like, hey, let's turn in the homework at the beginning of class. And I'd be like, oh, it's in my locker. I'll grab it quickly after class. During class, I'll go to the bathroom and like finish out the homework like on the toilet. You ever do that? Right?
I know that you did that. I just didn't do my homework. So it was a little different.
You just didn't do your homework. Turn the homework in at the beginning of class. You can have all the information you want during the game. You cannot be generating things during the game.
And
right? Like, that's the generative AI part of it is like, no, like, stop. Like, do this earlier and then react to it.
And listen, there's people that work in front offices that are saying, listen to this, saying, hey, don't like it, nerd better. And I get that. I understand that there's people that whose jobs it is to give their teams the edge by uploading certain things to the iPad. But I think for us, we would rather it be a little bit more simple. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, it's Friday. We give you the good, the bad, the ugly. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. It's Friday, time for Good, Bad, Ugly. One thing good, one thing bad, one thing Dan Ugla from the week that was. I'll go first. This is a bad into a good. Isn't that what the world's all about? Last weekend, the Commissioner of Baseball, Rube Moonfrood, went up at the MLB draft and announced that the Chicago White Sox had selected Rock Chalewski with the number one overall pick. Now, Rock Chalewski's name is not Rock Chalewski. It is Rock Chalowski. And we joked about how the team would handle the reality that this very important moment in franchise history was forever stained by a verbal flub from the commissioner. The White Sox crushed it. They tweeted a video on Thursday, which was Chalowski watching him being picked, and you hear Manfred in the background. And when Manfred says Rock and is about to say Chalowski, an explosion of noise bellows from the live crowd that was with the Chalowski family, overshadowing and drowning out the Chalewski of it all. And this is about as good as you can do. So clap it up. Great job from the Shikugu Wutsuk Social Mudu Department.
It does sound like that this is actually kind of what happened, though, too. This did require some delicate editing, but I do think that it was a situation where everyone watching heard Rock, you know, went wild. And then afterwards they're like, wait, he said what? I think Rock said when asked about it, he's like, I couldn't even hear it because everyone was so loud when they said Rock. And I was like, that's great politics and also probably true. So it worked out, and all the Rock already signing, and he's like already at this draft camp in Charlotte. By the way, shout out to Jesse Rogers for his fantastic story behind the scenes of the White Sox decision. And also just like the setup where they sent their photographer there and told them they were there with MLB. And it was great. Great story. I recommend everyone checking that out at ESPN.com. All right. From Chalewski to another of one of the great talents, great young talents in baseball, Beckham Trout. not Mike Trout, who's no longer a young talent, but just a talent. His son, Beckham Trout, who was one of the stars of the red carpet festivities at the All-Star Game. And Mike Trout, I guess at some point this information was shared to Lauren Shahadi, who was hosting the red carpet, that Beckham Trout is apparently a D-backs fan. And the way that Trout describes it is that it seems like he's a fan of whatever Little League team he's on. So I guess he was assigned the D-backs. And he talked about how when Trout recently hit a home run against the Diamondbacks, that Beckham was apparently booing him. He was apparently very upset that that Mike Trout homered against his beloved Snakes. However, the Diamondbacks tweeting this out made me wonder, have the Diamondbacks ever tweeted about Mike Trout?
No way.
Even Mike Trout's son is a fan of the D-backs, so I just went in Twitter advanced search, which is very broken now, but sometimes works very well. And I found that they have actually tweeted Trout on a couple of occasions. And the two I want to point out, the most recent one was a tweet from the 2019 All-Star Game. All right. So Trout obviously involved in that. And it's just a picture of Ketel Marte, who was playing second base. And it says, busy first inning in the field for Ketel. Also, he stayed in front of a Mike Trout scorched ball and got the out. So he's automatically MVP, right? So that's just like, again, you're
2019
bombing on to, very 2019 tweet. But my favorite one, this dates it so well. June 15th, 2012. What were baseball teams doing on their official accounts in 2012? They were live tweeting the action. Here is the tweet from June 15th, 2012. Cahill retires Trout to get out of the fifth unscathed. Top of the order due up for the D-backs. Can you imagine a team account posting anything along those lines now?
Inconceivable. That's so how long funny. Mike Trout's been around. Mike Trout is old enough to have been live tweeted.
God, it's so funny. Okay, anyway, that's my good. What's your bad?
Well, no, wait. What I loved about this is the idea that the Angels have been so irrelevant and bad that even Mike Trout's son cannot be hooked by them. Yes, I know that that's not the only reason here, but you're telling me that if the Angels were first in the American League, that Beckham Trout would be a Diamondbacks fan? No chance, man. Like there's this like malleability of fandom where like you can just pick and choose. I mean, you were what? Rockets, Titans, Rockies as a child, Jordan.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think that is only the case if your parents are not hardcore fans. And I think that Mike Trout should be a hardcore Mike Trout should be enough of a hardcore Angels fan that his kid is not rooting for the Diamondbacks. Maybe it is not that important, but it is also hilarious. Something that was hilarious in a really sad way, the ESPYs were this week, which is a thing that a younger version of me used to care about. However, after a touching, rousing opening performance from the Savannah Bananas, baseball was not particularly featured all that much until Shohei Ohtani won the ESPY for the best single game performance, which of course was his 3-for-3 with three homers on the mound during NLCS Game 4 last year. And to announce this award, who did ESPN select but the trio of DJ Khaled, Mike Tyson, and I'm going to be honest, one of the Paul brothers. I don't know which one this is. And the fact that I don't know the difference makes me feel good this morning. And of these three, the one with the worst reading comprehension skills was the one that announced it, as Mike Tyson said, Shohei Ohtani, and then as these guys were walking off the stage, you could see Tyson turn to the Paul brother in question and say, Shohei's a guy? Yeah, sure, dude. Is. Shohei's a guy. He's a guy. Maybe that's what he meant. Like, Shohei's a, like, he's a dude. Like, he's a guy. Yeah, he's a guy.
That guy's legit. Yeah, I mean, now we know a little bit more about.
He's not like Mike Tyson, a man that does bits, is not doing a bit here.
Yeah, it's we learned a little bit about. I don't think this. My takeaway from this is not like, oh wow, baseball's dying. It's okay. Well, yeah, Tyson is not. It's,
oh, Mike Tyson's
the world.
Dying.
It's like.
I worry watching this. I worry more about Mike Tyson than I do about baseball.
Well said. Well said. All right. For another crossover, we'll go to my bad. And that is the World Cup semifinal, which took place in Atlanta between Argentina and England. And how convenient for Michael Harris, the second, also known as there's only one Michael Harris, which the English soccer fans made sure he knew. They rallied around Michael Harris. They chose him as their favorite player when they went to a Braves game recently. And Michael Harris was like, oh, this is great. My team, who he's since adopted as his favorite footy club, is playing right down the street against Argentina. This is so cool. So he posts a picture. He says,
semifinal on an off day?
I couldn't miss this. It's coming home. Oh, it's coming home. And I'm sure after Anthony Gordon clanged one into the back of the net, he must have been going wild. And we know how the game ended. So I hope Michael Harris still had a good time. I love that he embraced this. I hope that he was not too shattered by this result. And I hope that despite England's crash out here and capitulation against the greatest to ever do it, Lionel Messi, I hope that Michael Harris can still, you know, use it as fuel for the rest of the season after being snubbed from the All-Star game and now watching England lose. I actually think this makes me feel better about Michael Harris the rest of the way. I think he's gonna try and triumph on behalf of England.
My ugla this week is also bad. This is a tweet from Bruce Levine. I believe it's Levine, not Levine. Correct me if I'm incorrect, Jordan. Bruce covers the White Sox and the Cubs for Marquee. He has been around for a long time. And a tweet from his account shot up during the All-Star break. You and the other coaches have been the stars of the team being 12 games over 500. Let's hope Twinkle D and Twinkle Dumb don't sell you guys out like the 2025. Enjoy the family time, pal. What? So here's what we have. We have a reporter that covers this team sending a text to a coach on the Cubs about how the front office, the GM and the president of baseball operations, Twinkle D and Twinkle Dumb, that's Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins, don't sell the team out. But instead of sending this tweet, Bruce just tweeted it. This is shocking stuff. Shocking, remarkable stuff. Hilarious stuff. Super bizarre. Apparently, Bruce, the Cubs, like, released a statement that said that Bruce had apologized to Jed and Carter, and it's, like, all in the past, acknowledging that he was indeed talking crap about these two guys to a member of the coaching staff. That in and of itself is not shocking. Like, I'm sure I've had text messages with players or coaches on teams where I am not saying nice things about other players or coaches on that team. But guess what, Jordan? I'm not tweeting it on accident. This is borderline disqualifying behavior for me. Like, you can't do this.
I am pretty stunned that the Cubs have acknowledged this.
Stunned.
I don't know how much of that has to do with the fact that they like own Marquee and he's a Marquee employee. That probably has a lot to do with it, but either way, very unfortunate, very funny, very embarrassing, and most importantly, very ugla. We wrap up this edition of the Good, Bad, the Ugla with another flub. Flubs all over the place. Oh my goodness.
Alex Rodriguez,
folks. One of the strangest in a career filled with A-Rod saying weird stuff on television, this one is way up there. As he was interviewing Justin Verlander, the commissioner's legend pick, because he is a legend and everybody is very familiar with Justin Verlander's career, on the Fox desk. And A-Rod, for some reason...
You know who never would have gotten a legend pick? A-Rod.
Who? A-Rod. Probably not for the commissioner's office. But A-Rod is still around and in interviewing Justin Verlander in, I guess, introducing Justin Verlander and asking him about his career, asked him the very confusing question, you know, Justin, quote, how do you explain being a late draft pick, being designated for assignment a couple of times by two different teams, right? Pause. Justin Verlander looks at him and he goes, me? Somehow, A-Rod seems to have confused who he was talking to. I love your theory, Jake Mintz, that he thought for some reason he was talking to Ernie Clement, or at least he was looking at notes related to Ernie Clement, who has indeed been designated for assignment by two different teams, and I guess fourth round is technically a late round pick. Maybe, I assume Ernie Clement was on that same desk at some point during that day. However, A-Rod, who literally seconds before this is talking to Justin Verlander about facing Justin Verlander. Like, their careers overlapped. They shared, like, this is a person that he's familiar with. And yet somehow he went TV autopilot, looked down at the notes, see that it says DFA'd twice, and is like, A-Rod, or Justin Verlander, you've been DFA'd twice. What do you think about
It's amazing.
Unbelievable.
It's amazing.
Unbelievable stuff.
Because, like, okay, A-Rod faced him 35 times. He actually
they
kicked
were talking
his ass.
About it.
Like, A-Rod
right
kind of kicked Verlander's ass.
Yes. Right before they were talking about it. And then he was just completely short-circuited.
It's so great because, like,
know,
the one of the things about Justin Verlander is that he's, like, always been good. Right, like, he was never not famous. He was the second overall pick. I like your theory that A-Rod, who was the first overall pick, is calling Justin Verlander, the second overall pick, a late pick. Like, that's funny. Oh, you went
second?
You
didn't go first overall.
You must have had to wait a while.
How did you overcome being such an – you were such an underdog? So funny.
What are we doing, A-Rod?
I love it. As ugly as it gets. All right, we're done.
The best part
thank you all for listening.
Is Justin Verlander's face. Yeah? I'm sorry. Justin Verlander's face be like, me? I know.
No. You got the wrong guy. So funny. You know what would have been better? If when they had Ernie on, he started talking to him as if he was Justin
second
Verlander.
Overall pick. Long time with the Tigers. Congratulations on
a great
career, Ernie.
Ernie Clement, you were selected by the commissioner as a legend to be here.
Both went to college in Virginia. Maybe that's the confusion. Who can say? This weekend, we got some heaters. Dodgers at Yankees. I'm getting in my car in a couple minutes to drive up there for that series in New York. The highlight of that will be Schlittliger Yamamoto Sunday night after the World Cup final. Mets at Phillies played yesterday in a haze of smoke. Because ESPN needed to have its game. This was an all-time
bad.
It was the worst. The good, the worst, the ugly. Rays at Red Sox, four games. There's a doubleheader Friday after a rainout that happened in May. Orioles Astros is interesting. Two teams trying to hang on. Pirates Guardians in a showdown of places that Jordan can drive to.
I will not be attending the next couple days because the air quality is so bad, but Paul Skeens on Sunday during the World Cup final, I think I will be in the building for. So baseball is back. I am so angry that they played last night. Not just even if it was perfect air quality, I would have been angry about it. I refuse to watch it. I wish everyone had a regular All-Star break, but either way, the regular season rolls on. The part two begins in earnest tonight. And we're off and rolling, folks. Trade deadline will be here soon.
One other game to highlight this weekend, Jordan. It's my only men's league baseball game of the year. I try to play one baseball game a year just to know that I still got some of it. I do not play on a team because I have a busy life and parts of my body hurt. But on Sunday, I will be suiting up for my sister's boyfriend's unit, his outfit, his club in the New Jersey Men's League Association. This team, Jordan, is it's a bunch of really smart guys who are like PhD students at Princeton and me.
Nice.
And I cannot wait. I am so excited for this. I got my glove out. I got my cleats in the car. I'm going to go 1 for 3 and have a stellar time. So I will report back on Monday with how I play. But Jake Mintz, podcaster, signing off. Jake Mintz, ball player, signing on.
All right. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas for producing. Everyone have a wonderful weekend, and you will get the Jake Mintz ball player review on Monday. Adios.